In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 47. It may or may not go off the rails. John Senecal, Brian Shackman, and the guest of honor, if you will, is a man by the name of Don Laviano. When's the last time someone called you Donald, by the way? Did your dad call you that when he was scolding
First of all,
you?
Is that your real name, Donald?
That is.
Of course it is. Who names their kid Don?
It's always been Don or Donnie. I'm named after my father, you know, Donald, but I always told the teachers, please call me Don or Donnie. And then my chemistry teacher, being the guy that he was to just be a ball buster to me, he said, nope, what's on your birth certificate? That's what I'm calling
you
by.
So he called you Donald?
He called me Donald. Drove me crazy.
So listen, the backstory is this. Is it Don Laviano?
Can I butt in for a second? Thank you for having me here and not coming to my kitchen. I don't know, Jerry, you guys went to him, Jerry Brooks, but right. I had to come here. You wouldn't come to my kitchen?
Well, Jerry does have a nice kitchen.
He does have a nice kitchen. He actually asked us if we wanted to drink, and alcohol probably would have been included. No, next time we'll go to your kitchen. If that's what you want,
Excellent. We'll
go to your kitchen. We'll come to you.
I don't like leaving the Valley very often. So.
I know that. That's why we haven't seen you in so long. I think with Jerry, it was more COVID. I don't even remember. But Don Laviano worked together at NBC Connecticut. So people who are outside of Connecticut, it's the NBC affiliate in Connecticut.
And it covers the whole state, unlike if you.
And I came in states, as a newbie, never been on TV, as a sports anchor and reporter. John Senecal was a videographer, a news photographer who did sports, 40% of the time? 30? What would you say?
I guess, yeah. Let's go with that. 30% of the time.
And Don Laviano was an intern while he was in college.
I interned with Kevin Nathan in college at UConn. That was when I first met Kevin. Kevin was only there, 30 days when I showed up. And, you know, then.
You guys were a team.
Yeah, we were a
team. A true success story, Don Laviano, intern.
Yeah.
Worked his way up the ranks at NBC Connecticut.
Yeah.
A true success story.
I interned at Channel 8 first with, I was pretty fortunate, with Bob Picozzi. Bob Picozzi there, and John Pearson, who was the sports producer there at the time. And they gave me my first TV job, actually. There was a sports producer opening, and I used to bug John all the time. I was like, hey, anything going on? Nah. And I saw him at a Ravens game, New Haven Ravens, because I was the public address announcer there. And I said, hey, John, anything going on? He goes, well, guess what? Something just opened up. And I had no professional sports producing experience outside of my internships. And Noah Finns was the sports director then. And on John, you know, I've always been very grateful to John. He's one of the people I owe in the business. You know, he kind of put his name out there, said, let's hire this guy. I know he can do it.
And then you screwed him by going to
You worked there for 6 months and left.
I was there for a couple years. And then, Kevin Nathan came a-calling. And said, hey, there's this opening here. You know, I'd like to get you in here. And it was another situation, you know, where he just went into the news director and said, this is
who I want.
This is who I want. I really didn't interview, except, you know, the guy met me, you know, the news director, met, BJ Fennell. And, you know, and then I was there for over 15 years.
Wow.
And, you know, working with Kevin was, you know, to this day, still one of the highlights of my professional career in anything. He's been a mentor, and it was great. And I mean, what a team! All the cool stuff that we got to do.
Definitely,
you guys know all that.
It was the highlight working with Kevin. He can wear a pair of jeans too,
Kevin Nathan.
K-Nay rocks the jeans as an inside joke that we always like to talk.
Why did
about.
He like dad jean it or like?
No, it was just.
No, he's got a nice butt.
We always saw him in a suit, and then he would wear, if he wore jeans, we're like, whoa, Kevin's in jeans.
And then I think he took it like literally, and I think he spent the whole Olympics in jeans, right?
Yeah, he was out in Sochi in jeans.
Every day.
So listen, so we wanted to have you in for two reasons. The first and foremost is that we wanted to catch up with you for a long time. The second is you may be a bigger Yankee fan than John.
Yeah, he probably is a bigger Yankee fan than me.
Really?
I don't know if he has more like clothing apparel than I do.
Well, how many items did you have?
Well, I think I figured out I had like around 50 shirts and stuff. Shirts and long sleeve and hoodies, and then probably another 10 to 12 like jackets, and then
so I think Donnie confirmed it. Like, that's what we need to do with super fans is sort of see what's in their closet, because like we didn't even ask him. We didn't even ask you to bring stuff.
Yeah, I know. This is radio, and I came with props. No, my wife was making fun of me. I packed a bag. I wanted to bring more.
I packed a bag.
I felt like I was doing too much. But
did you make a count? Did you count?
I think I'm way under when the T-shirts with John is like
hats are included, socks are included, mugs are included.
All right, I didn't count
apparel.
Hats.
You gotta say apparel.
Still,
you can't say everything.
I still own every Yankee hat I've ever had. From childhood.
And how many is that?
It's a lot. I mean, a lot of them, I always have the one that I wear when I'm mowing the lawn and stuff. So I have all the sweaty ones, which I can't bear to throw away. I just washed one of them the other day and I felt like I rejuvenated
it. Have you kept like everything that you own, right? Have you kept basically all the Yankee apparel that you've owned?
Yeah, I have a hard time getting rid of it.
So I don't get rid of it either. So I keep it, and I keep my kids' stuff that I bought them,
too. Because what, you think your grandkids are going to wear it someday?
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't get rid of my girl's first Yankee shirts, things like that.
You got her onesie and stuff?
Yeah.
With a crap stain?
Yeah, I mean, my most prized possession is a Yankee item. It's the most prized possession. It's the, you know, what do you run in the house if the house is on fire? What do you grab? I brought it with me.
Let's see it.
So, it's this.
Oh.
It's my silver
satin
jacket.
Hold that up over here for the camera. Now that is about as old school as it gets.
Is
right
that
there.
Like Mattingly era? Like how old is
oh,
that?
Oh yeah, this is from high school. I got this.
It's a starter jacket
it's
from
a
first.
Starter.
So that
I got
dates it right there.
I think 92? Freshman year of high school. So
91,
92.
Put it on. It's a little short in the sleeves.
No way. I'm sure it still fits.
Oh, my God. That is. I could just picture like a fat Don Zimmer wearing that jacket.
Hey, listen, you know you're doing something right when it fits perfect.
Well, it is a little tight. So I when I got this jacket, the starter factor, John, you probably remember this, or maybe, you live in Rochester, but it used to be in New Haven.
Yep.
So you'd be able to go to the New Haven factory and they would sell.
Starter had a factory in New Haven?
Yes. And they would sell, you know, like some rejects, some...
rejects.
Well, you know...
All the Oakland Raiders jackets.
No, like the stitch work was off or something.
Maybe a stitch work was off and stuff like that. And the satin jackets, these were it, you know?
Yep.
All I wanted was this one. And the one that I'm wearing, they made like an away jersey series, you know, so this is supposed to look like the road jersey, and I loved it. I just fell in love with it. I had to have it. I remember I saved up my pennies and I bought it, and I literally never took it off. I walked around high school with it. I'd wear it to my baseball games and I would take it off. You know, I slept in it. I literally remember sleeping in it. I wore it to college so much that, you know, when you give people nicknames at parties, you'd be like, oh, look, there's that girl, or there's this guy. You had a nickname, you'd be at the cafeteria. I'm at a party. I wasn't wearing it at the time. And a guy comes up to me and goes, dude, me and my buddies over there, we're talking about you. And I'm like, what are you talking about me? I'm just standing here on my own. He goes, I got to ask, do you have a silver Yankee jacket? And I go, yeah. Why? He goes, oh, my God, dude, guys.
It's
silver Yankee jacket, guy. Apparently, they would like comment on me as I'm walking in the cafeteria or something because I always had it on. But, yeah, I can't get rid of it. Every once in a while, I put it on for old time's sake.
Now, were they Red Sox fans? Or they didn't get that far?
I don't remember, but I do remember when I was in college.
Because you went to UConn, so you were
I went to UConn, and we did win in 96 when I was in college, and we had that up on the Red Sox fans there, which was
so
fantastic.
You know, he was. I'm glad I met Don when I met him, because I met him in 96. I don't think we'd be friends. Like, I could see a guy walking around with a hat and jacket of the Yankees, and then probably when the Yankees won it in 96, I'm sure he stuck it in people's faces. I'm sure.
Are you a trash talker when you're out? Like, do you talk trash if you see like Red Sox fans?
Not, I don't start it. Because I know you always talk about, and John's been saying this for years, that he can't go to a gas station without somebody coming
anywhere.
Up to him and starting with him. I'm not someone that starts it. If someone gives it to me, I give it right back.
Yep.
But I never like just walk up and go, look at this guy, you know. Or
has it?
Cause,
and
like
you're
that.
Not the kind of guy who likes to drop the gloves or whatever, but has it ever gotten like real?
I mean, I'll keep on going. You know, I'll keep on arguing, but I mean, really what I like is this is going to come off so horrible, but I like the intellectual Red Sox Yankee conversation, you know, and I have a, you know, my Red Sox friends that I can have a, a good conversation with, I always say, you're the one I like talking baseball with, you know, like somebody like a Jerry Brooks, you know, because you can have an intelligent.
Like, you don't just jump back to the 27 world championships.
Exactly. I would never say that to Jerry or to someone else because it's not about that. It's about like, it's kind of like, oh, did you, you know, we'd bug each other about the individual game. But then I loved hearing, you know, his Red Sox history stories, and I hope
right. It's not the kid wearing a Yankee suck T-shirt.
No, you know. No.
Yeah. The Buck Faustin.
I was going to say all the ones about, you know, Jeter and A-Rod and what they do in their social lives.
I mean, I might have yelled some things at some games, you know, at the actual game. I mean, I'm the guy that wears the Mattingly T-shirt and the Yankee hat to Fenway. The few times I go to that.
It used to be dangerous, but that's not dangerous.
Oh, it's such a hellhole. I hate that place.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
You really want to have an intellectual conversation about stadiums? Because Yankee Stadium is off the mark.
It's terrible. I just can't fit in Fenway. You probably can't either.
What are you, 6'3"?
6'4".
If you're over 5.5 feet, you can't fit in Fenway.
I'm 6 feet and I struggle, so I definitely get the discomfort of it. But
do you think they'll ever be able to build another stadium?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll ever build another stadium.
The Red Sox? Mm-mm. No, isn't it protected?
Well, what happened was, remember, if you go back to when John Henry's group bought it, there was this huge movement like to save Fenway Park because everyone assumed that the new owner would build a new park, right? And eventually, I was actually in favor of a new park. And then when I saw what like Larry Lucchino and those guys did, and they've basically replaced almost all the seats in the lower part up in the crappy grandstands. They sexy still haven't, and it's awful. I went back there to get out of the sun a couple months ago, and I was like, these seats suck.
Yeah.
But what they did to save it, I think, made sense. And now, listen, I've been going enough. I mean, you and I in the interim haven't been, but I've been a season ticket holder now since 2005. And I every summer, there's people from Iowa, Michigan, California. I sit next to people from all over the world who come there just because they want to say they went to Fenway Park.
Yeah, it's history. It's
but
historical.
It wasn't then. It was just an old piece of crap. So they've made it a tourist destination, which I think has saved it. And I get that.
But is there a way to do that and still have a new stadium, though? You don't necessarily have to knock the thing down.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that Camden Yards was such an improvement over was a Memorial
Stadium.
Well,
that was a dump, dude.
Right,
I mean,
but that's
like,
the
Fenway
point.
Is unique, all right? Like, if there's anything that's unique,
that's why you don't build another
baseball,
one. That's just that's
the
exact argument.
You could still have that park. You could still host things there. The Red Sox don't have to play there.
No.
You could fill that thing all the time with concerts and sporting events.
I just don't think that's possible. I think that there.
But is it, I mean, going forward, are you going to be able to stay in that stadium going forward as the way progression and progress
and
everything?
They'll just improve it the way they can and make and then keep increasing the ticket prices. I know, honestly, like that's, I mean, I can't foresee a dynamic where they don't have Red Sox games at Fenway Park. I just don't see it. Anyway, he's Don Laviano. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Real quick, Don, what else is in the bag that's worth talking about?
Well,
And what would you say for a number of pieces?
Oh, number of pieces? I can't even begin.
You think
to know.
He have more? I think he's got more than you. Yes or no? More than 50?
I don't know. When you say pieces,
yeah,
what do you
pieces,
mean pieces?
That changes everything. I mean,
it could be all sorts of crap. I mean, I got my dog's named Jeter and Yogi.
What's the rule?
So, I mean, those are two pieces right there.
So you're just talking clothing?
Yeah, just clothing.
I think John's got me on that. But like my Yankee jackets, I have two other starter sag Yankee jackets.
You do?
Yeah, one's still in the plastic because that's I'm saving it for if the other one ever wears out. So I have a good
wait.
Good
it's
one
never
to go
been
to.
Worn?
No, it's still in the plastic.
I wonder what that would go for on eBay.
Oh, it's not that. It's probably not worth anything. It's only worth anything to me.
I don't know.
You know. So I did bring five T-shirts, and they're my five World Series T-shirts. You know, so these are the ones that I'll never get rid of. You know, I got the 96.
Do you wear them?
The 98, the 99, the 2000, and the 2009. Yes, I wear them.
You do wear them.
I wear them. The ones from 96 and 98, they're not so much flattering anymore, and they're a terrible design, but they mean, I mean, literally the 96 shirt meant everything to me.
You unfurl it?
Oh, that's awesome, dude. I haven't even seen that in ages. I have the 2009 one.
They're all the locker room shirts.
Yep.
You know, I always got the locker room shirts when they won, you know, what they put on the field. I know it's just to sell T-shirts to suckers like me. And, you know,
sure,
I'm a
you're
sucker.
A sucker. Yeah.
I get it. I always felt like my sports teams were never going to win. you know, as a kid.
Well, especially you grew up when the Yankees weren't that good.
No, I grew up in the 90s. When I went to high school from 89 to 93, and the Yankees were terrible.
Well, they were also terrible when you were a younger kid, too. I mean, the early 80s, they were
Dave Winfield.
I have to chime in, because you guys said, I remember which podcast it was on, the Yankees had the best winning percentage in the 80s. They were not terrible in the 80s.
That's so weird that that's true.
I know, they just never won a World Series, but if all the teams, they had the best winning percentage. They did go to a World Series in 81. They were second place in 85 and 86. They were good all throughout.
Can you imagine how many more World Series they would have won if there was the wild card back then?
Oh, I mean, don't get me going. The 95 team was fantastic, you know. And the 85 team and then the 86 team is my favorite team that never won.
So Donnie Baseball would have been in the Hall of Fame with three rings.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The Yankees would have had 30 World Series championships.
I mean, the lineup was
if
sick.
If there was a wild card back
the
then.
The lineup was sick. Henderson, Randolph, Mattingly, Winfield, Baylor in 85. You know, right there. I mean, that was sick. You know, Guidry won 20 games in 85. You know, Rasmussen won 18 in 86.
This part of me, I want to ask you an origin story, but this part of me that wishes we didn't have the wild card. I love the fact that the Red Sox and the Yankees are still playing relevant games, but I do like that sort of exclusivity. Like, remember back in the day when the champion of the American League went straight to the World Series, the champion of the National League? Like, yep. Like, you could have a 95-win season and not make the playoffs. I mean, that's just crazy.
And that's how those Mattingly teams were, you know, the 85 and 86.
You know, I want to ask you, like, how did you become a Yankee fan? Like, you grew up in the Valley, and people don't know Connecticut.
I got more props about that.
Well, take us through the story, because, you know, John talked about it when we started, and you guys are way more hardcore. And let's face it, Connecticut is sort of the Mason-Dixon line of Red Sox-Yankees. And is it just because your dad? Like, most people, it's because of their dad.
It's the only team that I actually took from my father. He was actually born in the Bronx, and he likes all the New York teams. You know, he's a Yankees, Jets, Knicks, you know, fan. I hate the Jets, you know.
You're a Patriots fan?
Oh, God, that's insulting.
What are you? I don't even know.
I'm not even as big an NFL fan as I used to be. When people ask, what's your favorite football team, I usually say the Ansonia Chargers. So that's where I go these
days. Not a bad team to root for.
No, you know, title town. But anyway, but the Yankees, I was given a Yankee hat when I was really young, and I remember watching games with my dad, and the first player I ever stuck to, and to this day is still my favorite player, is Dave Rigetti.
I loved him, too.
So, and the reason, I was a kid, and my father would say, Spaghetti Rigetti's pitching. So I'm a kid.
Starting pitcher, Dave Rigetti.
Yeah, starting pitcher. Yeah. So
he was a lefty, right?
Yeah. So I'm like 5 years old, 6 years old, or whatever, and the name, you know, it sounds silly, so I liked him, you know? And I get my first Little League team, and I got number 19. You know, because of Dave Rigetti. I've been obsessed with 19 ever since.
Was Guidry 19 too?
No, Guidry was 49.
Louisiana Lightning.
Jeez. So, I mean, I got my old Ansonia shirt on. It's number 19. I have a number 19 belt buckle that I wear.
Any tats? You got a 19 tat?
No, not a 19 tat. I would like to.
He always plays the 19th hole at every golf course.
Well, that's for different reasons.
And my other most prized possession that I own is my Dave Rigetti baseball glove.
Autograph Dave Rigetti.
Well, it's the model. It's He didn't autograph, but it's the Rigetti model glove. And I remember being in Caldor, if you guys go Caldor, walking through with my mother, and we're always going through the sporting goods and just trying on the gloves. And I go, oh my God, there's a Rags model. I can't believe it. And I didn't want to leave without it. I mean, I was like begging. And like, I
did you throw
it
to
the dishes for a month?
No, but like, I had to have the glove, and I got it. And I used it for every game, and it's seen some better days. And I've always taken care of it. I keep a ball in it still.
So how old were you when you got that? Probably.
Oh, I mean, probably I was probably about 9 or 10 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because it wasn't my first glove. It wasn't my first glove.
Yeah, I bet you could get him to sign it now.
Oh, I would. Well, there's a funny story about that. So I'm at my first Yankee game in 1985, and my brother and I, my father took us, and he brings us. My brother's a Mets fan, but, you know, it was me, my dad, and my brother. And we'd go where the players walked in, back when you can do that. And you'd see
They walk right up gate four.
It was fantastic. Yep. And you're like, you're seeing all your idols. And imagine being, I was 10 years old, my first game, August 8th, 1985. Yes, I remember it. I can tell you everything that happened. Ed Whitson started. Mattingly homered in the first Yankee game I ever went to, John. Can you believe it? It was Mattingly, Pasqua, and Ron Hassey homered for the Yankees, and Dave Rigetti got to save.
You said Pasqua?
Yeah. So it was literally like a perfect day. So the players are walking in, and I see Rigetti, and I'm holding this hat. Where was it? Well, I had it.
Or the one, the mesh hat. You had it before.
Oh, geez.
Is it underneath the jacket?
There it is. I got it. So I'm holding this hat. This is the hat that I was wearing at the time, one of these great mesh hats from the 80s. And all I want to do is get Rigetti to sign it, you know? And he starts signing autographs. Remember the players would like kind of walk and talk and sign as they're going and stuff like that. And he's signing little ticket stubs and stuff like that. And I'm just this little skinny. I mean, so skinny, and I'm just trying to fight my way through, you know? And I get there, and I thrust it in front of him, and he was at the gate, and he walked through.
Ugh.
You know? He didn't do anything mean. There was there was nothing like, get away, kid.
Right.
It was nothing.
It's probably
like
almost
that.
Like he didn't even know you were there.
Exactly. It was just, he got to the end, and it was time for him to walk in. And it took me that long to get there. And I looked like
I'm sad
like
right
those
now.
Old like Norman Rockwell photo, you know, my head just dropped, you know, I was crushed and stuff like that. And then Ron Guidry walked in, and Ron Guidry sat there and signed for every kid because he wasn't pitching that day.
Yep.
So he sat there, and you can barely see it.
Yep.
It's in pen, literally not Sharpie. It's
right.
It's a little ballpoint.
I can
pen.
See it.
He signed the brim, Ron Guidry.
And back in the day, their autographs were actually really cool because they actually would mostly write their names.
Yeah,
It wasn't
two slash marks.
Scribble. So I mean, so this is my first game, and you know,
did you feel better? Because I was sad. I'm just sad
did,
for you now.
The Rigetti thing still bothers me. Yeah. It's
so I can remember going with my father down exactly what he's talking about, and like, I had totally forgotten about this until you just brought this up, Don. That we used to go there, and you could literally stand there and watch the players walk in. They
from the parking lot.
And they'd be all dressed up in their suits and everything, and it was like. And that like,
you're feet away from him. There
literally,
was no,
like feet away from him. That's so cool. Like I had totally forgot about that
and
until you brought that up.
Remember, they would move the barrier and let the kids go.
The
up
The kids
to
would
him.
Be
able
to go up.
They wouldn't be able to do that these days. But there'd be the barriers, and then when a player would walk up, they would kind of open and let the people go up, and it was kind of acceptable to do that.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time on the show about how the money. Well, first of all, then it got to be the point where adults were like paying kids to get autographs. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then,
then
the players started to get skeptical of kids. Now, that's not so much the case anymore, but now it's just like you make $35 million. The fans think they're owed something. Like the culture of it is different.
Totally different.
And
they've
in most parks they've pushed the fans, the real fans, away from the field.
Yeah.
Up and out.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to go at all.
Near it. They're not. They're the ones that yell and bring the.
I mean, honestly, like the real fans, like the crazy fans that would go to all the games if they could, if it was super affordable, are sitting right here that watch the games every single night.
Right.
And struggle to stay awake and like lay in bed to try to watch the end of the game as they blow another lead.
Right. Meanwhile, there are thousands of empty seats in Yankee Stadium because they're too expensive to people to buy.
I used to go to games all the time. I can't afford to go to these games.
No. So let me ask you, were either of you guys with me when I think it was the Marlins closed out the Yankees and we interviewed Carl Pavano's mom?
I wasn't on the field for that.
It was probably Dan Lee, I bet.
I edited it, you know. Don't
Because Mrs. Pavano was like on the field at Yankee Stadium celebrating and like saying all this mean crap about the Yankees.
So we're literally going from my favorite to my least favorite. Like you literally did that transition from Dave Rigetti is my favorite Yankee of all time.
To your least favorite.
My least.
No, isn't it? Is it Southington's own Carl Pavano?
Carl Pavano is my least favorite Yankee.
Was he your least favorite before he played there?
No, I wanted him to come.
Oh, you did.
Because after 03, I said, this makes the most sense. He was a Yankee fan growing up. Get the big guy.
Right.
You know, get the big guy. I was in high school. I was playing baseball the same time he was playing. And this is before the internet, you know? So we'd be, you know, playing ball and you'd be hearing like, oh, the big kid from Southington's pitching tonight.
Yeah.
Nobody knew the name.
Right.
But because there wasn't that same like recruiting type thing back then and stuff. So I was like, get the big guy.
Yeah.
Like, I remember me and you talked about it. And
we
then,
talked about that with Rico Bronya. He didn't even know who he was.
Don't knock Rico.
He was terrible. And to this day, there's only been one baseball player that Derek Jeter has called out negatively.
And it's him.
Carl
Pavano. Is that true?
That's it.
What did he say?
He basically said like, well, if our pitcher ever comes to play, you remember that?
Yeah, something.
He never calls out anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but he had it with him. He had it with him.
Didn't he get in a car accident in like the parking lot and broke his rib or something like that?
So Jeter had it with him.
I just remember his mom just being so ruthless about the Yankees and gloating, and I was like, she just reminded me
over the top.
She reminded me of that woman, that TV reporter who was stomping on the grapes and then fell over. Like that's what Bob reminded me. Anyway, we have so much to talk about in so little time. I did want to ask you about. We talked last week about the Jeter, you know, Hall of Fame stuff, and you know, we both John and I were struck. We saw you put it out on social media. You had a picture this year with what is it? Pettit,
Jeter, Posada, and Tino.
Yeah, everyone but Mariano. Like, right?
Well, you're going to go down the core four argument, which I don't necessarily agree with. Well, I hate the term the core four.
Okay, well, we don't have to do it. Just I want to know how the heck you got in that photo and what it was like to be in that photo.
So, I mean, we talked. Listen, guys, I've been blessed. I had the opportunity to interview 1,000 athletes.
Yep.
You know,
through your job as sports producer. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I've.
There's a big difference between interviewing athletes and then when there's no cameras around and standing near them and talking to them.
I've gotten to interview, you know, the people that I've looked up to, admired as kids. I got to interview Dan Marino, who was one of my, you know, favorite athletes as a kid.
Walter Camp Award, Dan Marino? Was he at the Walter Camp dinner?
No, he was when he was filming the Nutrisystem commercial at Rensselaer Field.
Oh, it wasn't the gloves? It wasn't the isotonics?
No, I asked him about that. You know, so...
Do you remember the Joe Namath video when he was smacking Alex Boyer in the butt live on camera? Do you remember that?
Yes.
That was hilarious. He was drunk in the morning.
As always.
At that kids' youth sports camp.
Yep.
And he started cracking him in the butt on live camera. That was one of the funniest things ever.
That's
oh
Joe Namath for you, Broadway Joe.
No, but what was it like to be,
So Derek Jeter was always my white whale. You know, we used to put in interview requests for him. We tried to get him, and he was going for 3,000 hits the year he,
We're Connecticut, so we don't mean anything to them.
Yeah, it was only national stuff, you know, and it was tough. So
there was no Connecticut angle on Derek Jeter. Like, if there was, trust me.
Yeah, we would have been all over
it. We would have found
it. We would have found
it. And usually there always is a Connecticut angle.
So he had his, I got to go to his charity golf tournament for the Turn 2 Foundation, and this year it was called the Inauguration Invitational. You know, it was raising money, you know, and
where is this, in New York? Somewhere in New York?
Yeah, it was in New York, a fancy golf club. I can't even remember the town it was in, but, you know, it was private, it was exclusive. And, you know, there was only like 18 foursomes playing. This is not just everybody. And, you know, Jeter's there, and then, you know, those other Yankees were there. Those were his closest friends and stuff like that were still associated.
So how do you wind up talking to these guys? How do you wind up in a picture with these four?
So I was there for work, we were a sponsor, and so Jeter was going around saying hello to everybody. I was like, I'm not blowing this. You know, right. I go.
You got to be aggressive.
I actually went in. I had things I wanted to say to all of them. I knew exactly where I was going with every single one of them and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, you know, sports journalist Donnie goes out the window, and 12-year-old Donnie just shows up. And it's just like fanboy. And I never got tongue-tied with any of these other people and stuff. You know, it never bothered me. It was just what I did, and I enjoyed it and was used to it. But, man, I was like, these are my guys. These are my guys. Anyone associated with the 96 team, John, I need to tell you, they're my guys.
Yeah.
You know, and they will always hold a special place in my heart. When I talk with my friends, when we're talking Yankees, it always goes back to 96. Always does. You know,
but do you go up and you say, can I get a picture with you? Is
so
that as simple
I go
as
up
it?
To him. I said, Derek, I said, you know, I'm a huge fan. You know,
he's never heard that one.
I know. You know, I did all that, the thing that I was able to engage him with that he didn't hear before, I said, just so you know, I was 7-0 at playoff games that I attended. I never saw you guys lose a playoff game. He goes, He goes, you are a good luck charm.
He was being
charming.
Because he always says the perfect thing.
He was on. But then this is where he went next. He goes, can I bring you to Miami with me?
and at that point you said, yes.
It was good. And then his golf bag had some Miami stuff on. I go, I don't really like the Marlin stuff on here. You know, and he just kind of laughed and had fun with it. He wasn't being chased by the media,
right.
So he was more engaging, and he would come by a couple times and stuff like that, and he engaged me a bunch of times. You know, I asked him, I said, Derek, it would be all right if I got a picture, you know, and he was like, he was very cool with it. So here's where it gets funny, though. So now he's playing in the foursome with Andy, Tino, and Jorge.
Well, he gets to play with his guys on the course.
They didn't split him up with a bunch of people.
$10,000 a hole stuff.
That's awesome for him.
So here's where it gets fun. So now my goal is I got to get a picture with all four of them. That's all I care about. I don't care about what I'm doing for work. I don't care about anything else. It's literally about this picture.
He would even jeopardize the job, probably.
Everything had to be about this picture. Yeah. I was like, I have to get this picture. So they finally come up, and they're playing on a hole. And now my wife, not a sports fan. Angela doesn't care about sports. But when we first got together, you know, I like to watch the Yankees, and she's kind of like, well, you know, let's... You know, when you're first together, like you want to do everything. Now she'd care less about watching games than me. But, you know, but she got an affinity for Andy Pettit. She liked watching him. She liked the way he competed. She loved the intensity of his face.
Thought it was cute.
Yes. I think she thought he was good looking, you know, and the way he always put the glove up in front of his face, you know, and hide and stuff like that.
I like Pettit too.
So my goal was I wanted him to say hi to her. You know, and I'm like, I'm just going for it. I don't even care. I mean, I would never do this as a journalist. I never did this type of stuff. I never asked for anything.
You couldn't really.
But it wasn't even like it was just like I was happy to be there.
You were a jackass if you did.
You did, exactly. Unless you were like about to quit or something. You're like a week from leaving. But you just, it really never crossed your mind.
You just don't do it.
Yeah, you don't.
So here's where I embarrassed myself, because I'm usually always good with the etiquette and stuff like that. So Andy comes walking up, and he's walking towards the golf bag, and I go, Andy. You know, I was like, you pitched in my favorite baseball game I ever watched, game 5 in 96, the 1-0 game where he beat Smoltz. You know, and I'm going in, I'm thinking, I'm going to ask him, my favorite baseball play was, he fielded the bunt, remember?
Yep, threw it out third.
I always say the balls he had to make that play, because if he doesn't make the play, maybe they lose the game, you know? And I wanted to ask him about it, and it just turned into, hey, Andy, I'm so excited. You know?
And you call my wife and say hi.
So I asked, I go, Andy, you know, my wife, she's a huge fan. I said, this sounds crazy. Could I just take a video of you saying hi to her? Her name is Angela. And he looks at me and he goes, yeah, sure. Can I finish the hole?
I'm about to putt out here, guy.
And I go, I thought he did finish out and was going to the next
one. Oh, wow, what a jackass.
Yeah, so I just felt terrible. So now I don't want to look like Stalker Donnie, so I back away. I just clear the hole. And I wait for him to come all the way back, and I just stood in the back, and I was like, I can't believe it. You know, Andy came up to me though. He goes, you want to do that video now? So it was really cool. Like, I didn't ask again. He remembered. He came right back up. He did it. I surprised her. She was thrilled. She was like, I can't believe it, you know. And then I went up and talked to the other guys, and I just had a little conversation with each of them, and just kind of, you know, set a highlight.
Were they in between holes?
Yeah. And they were really cool, and you know, they appreciated it. You know, they hear from a fan, whether they really meant it, you know, but like they were friendly. You know, Tino, what a nice guy.
All those guys seem pretty
Yeah, they really are. And again, Jeter, I think it's a bad rap, you know, from guys like you who don't like how sterile he is and stuff like that.
100%.
You find him boring. But he couldn't have been more gentlemanly and nice and stuff.
So how'd you get the picture?
I asked Derek. I said, I went, Derek.
Derek, can you organize this for me?
I mean, I did. First of all, like, I had already talked to him 3 or 4 times.
How much more can you ask for? You're like, can I come home with you tonight?
Am I ever going to see him again? Probably not. But, you know, this is my one time to get it with you. So I said, Derek, I said, do you think you can get the guys and get a picture? And he goes,
he round up the boys.
My God.
So he does. He rounds them up. And Tino started walking. He goes, hey, Tino, no, we're doing a picture over here. You know, and like they had fun with it. And I appreciated it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And listen, I'm 46 years old, and I was acting like a little kid, and I didn't care. It's literally going to mean something to me down the road.
You were these things. You sent me that picture, dude, and I was excited.
Oh yeah,
I wasn't even there.
You gave me one of my best reactions. I remember, you know, and because I couldn't share it enough, and I'm not usually like that, but I was so excited to show, you know, my fellow Yankee
but
fans.
But it's, you know, just to put a ribbon on it, it strikes me that those guys know their place in Yankee history, and they respect it to the point where they're not gonna. And it's so easy for guys to be jerks, right? Like, even if a guy wasn't a jerk and just didn't want to do it, then because the demands on them are so high.
Right.
Like, we've all seen the demands, and if you're not nice to one person, then they give you the finger, and then they put it on social media.
Especially nowadays with video, and
even worse. Yeah. And so you realize how hard it is to be good. But like those guys to sort of like recognize how special they are to you, even if it seems crazy that a 46-year-old man can't speak. The fact that they respected it, I find that to be very cool.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not the first one to be a super fan to them, I'm sure, but like I wasn't talking about like run-the-mill things. You know, I wanted to talk
so you
to
thought
Andy
you came
about
in,
to play a third.
I know, but also people think they're doing well with strippers and they think that it works. You know what I mean? Like, the point is, like, I'm sure there are a lot of people try to get their rap down too. But and maybe you're right that you were a little more sophisticated than the average fawning fan. But the truth is, they could still blow you off.
Exactly, and it was cool. I had a moment, and I was thrilled. You know,
Especially for someone like
to get all those guys together. Yeah. That to me was cool.
Yeah. What I hate is that the person who's at the event who really couldn't give a crap, someone tells them that they're great, and then they take an opportunity for someone like you to interact with them, even if they don't care. You know, like those golf tournaments and other events are full of people who really don't care.
They're just there.
Yeah. All I was concerned about was that the camera was going to work. I was panicking. That's
well,
it wasn't going to be framed right. You know,
whatever. Like, what about the classic TV thing? Like, let me just switch out my battery. Yeah. How many times does that happen? When like, I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. And your battery's not ready.
Yeah. Or you forget to hit record, and you get halfway through like the interview, and you're like, there's something wrong with the camera. Hold on a second.
Right. Or your mics are off. Like last week, we had a great exchange. All right. He's Don LaViano. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, the Don LaViano episode, which is number 47, which was just, it's just nice to reconnect, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
And even though, you know, we didn't always see eye to eye in the sports department.
No, Brian and I sometimes, we would get a little heated.
Hard. Like the producer, like we used to have tapes and like Sunday Sports Replay, which is our Sunday night recap. We used to have like 40 plus tapes.
Oh yeah,
for a show, which is
sticking them in that stupid metal container.
Oh my god, the down rack. Yeah. And if eventually Don gave it to Scott Krevet, we won't get into all that stuff.
Well, I remember. Do you? I brought this up early. Do you remember what our biggest fight was about?
I don't.
So, Brian thought. See, I always fall into the simplistic thing, John. You know, like editing and things like that. He wanted everything covered. He wanted. He didn't want to see a talking head. He thought everything needed to be covered. He thought it was being lazy.
Yeah,
if
didn't cover everything.
If we didn't. You know, he was afraid of being, I think Brian was always afraid because he was new to the business of being accused of being lazy.
Probably,
you know, because he wanted to come off, he was a hard worker, which he was. And he was like, I don't think we covered enough of that video. We didn't put enough B-roll or, you know, or video highlights over the interview. I'm like, no, I want to see the person talking. I want to see the, and we're sitting there arguing about it. He goes, you're just being lazy. I am not being lazy. We're literally going back and forth about it, and I'm like, no, this is how it is.
Sorry,
you know.
And then it didn't air. And then didn't air because of weather, so it didn't matter anyways.
Right, and Bob Connors comes down and says, "I'm cutting 45 seconds."
Yeah. Sorry, you guys hate each other now.
It's not
gonna
air.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I will tell you that if people don't know what we did in the old building, there was the sports department was in the back in the basement.
Like
basement
you had to corner. Go down basement
steps,
corner.
And nobody. I used to bring my dog in on weekends. At some point,
you wouldn't even know it's there.
Right. Nobody could tell the difference, and we were our own little. Honestly, our own little enclave, and we had certain shooters, you know, that work well with us. And you know, I only did it for only less than a year and a half, believe it or not. And I will tell you two things. One, Kevin Nathan, who he and I didn't see eye to eye on things on some things too, but like he couldn't have been a better mentor, a work ethic precedent setter, a teacher, and like for Don, who had already done a little more TV than me. It just was great to feel like you were, and we had our moments, but like that you were sort of like had this common goal.
Yeah.
Like even though we were a little crappy Connecticut or whatever, like we tried to put on a product that was as good as Boston.
It was very team oriented. I mean, we all came from sports backgrounds, so we all had that feeling of like, you know,
we really cared about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to care and there's passion, you know.
I know we're getting long here, but I want you to mention one thing. So you had a huge debut on TV, right? And it was a forced debut, right? Can you just tell us real quick about that? And I want to remember, what was the big bang phrase that you used?
Boom goes the dynamite.
Boom goes the dynamite.
The dynamite. So
real quick, how'd it happen?
It's because Brian got married.
There you go, Brian. Screwing
Brian
things
got
up
married,
again.
And there was nobody available to be the sports caster.
But wasn't Kevin on the road and was going to do it from the road or something, wasn't he?
I think he went. Did he go to the wedding?
So, no, it was the Super Bowl.
And Kevin was going to do it from
the
road.
Super Bowl, and Kevin was live in Houston, and he was going to do the whole show in Houston. And I was the backup, and you know,
technical difficulties.
I was. That was always a goal, was to be an on-air person.
Used to do air checks. I remember.
Now listen, now this is a Super Bowl.
It never worked out for me.
This is Super Bowl night, right? This isn't a Tuesday afternoon in freaking December.
So it was Patriots Carolina. It was the Patriots
and the Pats are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and the Pats are. So it's our obvious lead story. Kevin's live from Houston.
Is it on NBC? Please tell me it's on NBC.
I don't remember.
I don't think they have the NFL.
No, I don't think so.
And. Literally, the animation is rolling for Sunday Sports Replay, and we lose Kevin. Kevin's not there.
Now, are you standing out in the studio?
Not yet.
You're not out in the studio.
I'm in
yet.
The producer's chair.
Did you have a tie on? Did you have a tie on?
I had my suit on. I was ready to go.
So you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And the bullpen if needed.
I had everything but the mic on me at the moment.
Okay.
And Kevin's not there. He all of a sudden disappears. And so I have to run out onto the floor. And you know, I hit the mark, and they throw a mic on me real fast.
Now, granted, now you've lost your producer, and you're out
now,
there on
now
your
I have nobody able to talk to me.
Right. And you have no IFP?
Well, it didn't matter. I had no one to talk to me.
Right.
You basically just got to stand out there and do
matter.
The sports.
Yeah, so I had to do sports, and I also had no scripts because Kevin was live in Houston.
Now, Brian, real quick, explain how hard that is for someone that's been on air.
First of all, it's hard even if you've done it for 10 years. Like sports TV is, you get better with reps. So
right.
If you've had no reps, it's hard even with scripts. So if you have no reps and you have no scripts and you have no production support, it's basically like
impossible.
Flying in a snowstorm without autopilot, right? I mean, it's like incredibly difficult. So the question is, how did it go?
I mean, overall it went good. I had to do the highlights, and the worst part was
you cut him, so that helps.
Well, yeah. So I was aware of the highlights and everything, and you know, I was able to throw to some sound that we got and stuff. So it gave me a breather. Somebody kept running out and was, you know, telling me you got to stretch, you got to talk longer and stuff. And I kept saying, "You got to be kidding me."
That was the buzzer. You got to be kidding me.
You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me.
You were thinking it and saying
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And the whole time, the 11 o'clock news people were still in the desk. Because they were sitting there in case they needed to jump in for
right.
whatever reason. I forget, I know it was Lisa Carberg, who's now at Channel 8, and the stares I felt, I don't mean bad,
right.
but they're just looking at me like what's going to happen? And I could just feel everyone looking at me, and I was just going off, I was just flying off the cuff,
yep.
you know? And I was talking, and the thing that I got bugged the most about is, I think we referenced this earlier in the show, I am not a Patriots fan. I dislike the Patriots immensely. And my buddies killed me because you sounded like the biggest Patriots fan. So excited. You're such a phony and all that stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
You'll always have
yeah,
that memory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We eventually did get Kevin back, and he had no idea what happened. He just picked up the
show. Saved the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
that's
listen,
awesome.
Before we go, we've gone long, but it's so worth it. Just give me your sense of the season for the Yankees and what do you think's going to happen.
I don't know. My friends that we've been talking. I mean, I don't think there's ever been in the history of this team a more frustrating season. I really don't. I mean, I suffered in the 90s, but I didn't expect anything. I knew they weren't going to win, so that wasn't frustrating. You know, the worst loss as a fan is the 0-1 World Series. I get nightmares about it still. If I think about it, I won't be able to sleep. I replay that inning over and over again. But this season, I just the ups and the downs. They win 13 in a row, and now they lost 13 out of 15. I can't even believe it. Anything that momentum they got, they handed right back. They drive me nuts. And then the only guy that's worth any money, Judge has proven he's worth the money. He's proven it.
Yeah, now he's got dizzy spells,
and now he's falling down. He's rubbing his eyes. I don't know. And then you know, Stanton showed some life last night. I know we don't want to be too topical on a specific game, but you know, him and the Lindor, they got their
Stanton
thing last
has been
night.
A good surprise for
you know
us.
What I gave
I'm not
going to
knock him.
The guy, I think the guy cares, and I've been hard on him.
Yeah.
I've been a detractor. I haven't liked him. You
there's
know?
So many other things we could point to
exactly.
other than Mike.
So,
sorry, Giancarlo Stanton.
I actually agree with what ESPN said last night, and I don't agree a lot with what they do or say. Was Loaizaga is killing him not being there,
yep.
you know, and if Cole's hurt, they're done.
Yeah,
but I right now there's not many games left. And
Cole
they
is supposed
to
make his next start.
Well, I mean, nobody would have expected that they were going to win 13 in a row.
No,
after that, I was convinced that they were kind of going to roll. In fact, when we had Matt Sarois on, who is a producer at TIC 1080 here at our station, he was like, "I'm not writing him off to win the division," and that was like at the peak of that streak.
They were only four back.
Yeah.
It was possible. And now, forget it. Now it's...
So Brian asked me this last week. Put your chances on them making the postseason. Are they going to be able to make it in the wild card?
I've always been a glass half full guy. You know, the only time I ever said that they were done was after game four of the 04 ALCS. I knew it was over.
There's
I said
no
it to
way.
I said it to everybody there at NBC that night. I said, series is over. Yanks just lost
no
this.
Way.
Yep. I said it to everybody. I knew it. I saw the look in the Red Sox team and the look in the Yankee team, and they were two different teams going two different directions.
That's stunning.
And that's just,
but
that's how baseball can happen, too. You
know I know, that. But yeah. I mean, I've never heard that.
Yeah.
That's
No. I said it. And then it was confirmed on game five, and then they were done.
Yeah.
They were done.
Totally right.
They were done. But I'm going to say that they find a way to squeak in. because I don't see the...
And Brian and I think they're one and done. Like, they're the Yankees or Red Sox, if they make it, they're not going any further than that first game. So one goes for...
Well, they would play Tampa.
They'd play Tampa.
And I don't know what Tampa has in their water, but they just have this...
Yanks can't get over Tampa.
Neither can Boston. And the thing is, it's weird that this team has this confidence that's just... It's kind of insane.
The best team in baseball now is the Blue Jays right now going at this point. And the freaking Giants still. I mean, they just keep winning.
I love the Giants. I'm into that. I love Yastrzemski being on that team.
It's unreal.
I interviewed him.
Mike?
Yeah, when he was at the... Great kid when he was with the Connecticut Tigers.
Was that the team in Norwich? Or?
Yeah, that was the Norwich team, yeah.
So was that when they were actually affiliated? Were they a double-A team?
With the Tigers.
They were the double-A team or single-A?
Single-A team of the Tigers. When he first got drafted, yeah.
Yeah, because he's older, that's right.
I love his story, the fact, and his teammates love him, and it took him years and years and years to get there. He strikes out a ton, but I really look at the box score. I'm not a box score guy.
He doesn't strike out more than Joey Gallo, so that's all that matters.
That's true. But it's one box score. I check the Giants box score every day, and I know with Chris Bryant getting there, he's gotten fewer at-bats, but I mean...
I'll tell you what I'd like to see is a playoff to get into the playoff.
Oh, gosh. More teams.
One game to get into the one game.
The NCAA basketball tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But what if
all three
of them are tied?
Oh, then
like
the
a play-in
game?
Play-in.
Yeah, they don't have the Yankees don't have any tiebreakers, I don't think.
I think Toronto's good. Listen, we got to go. But Toronto
can't start all three.
Toronto's a good for baseball team. Like, I'm not sure the Red Sox are good for baseball. I'm not sure the Yankees are good for baseball.
They do have George Springer, Connecticut.
Toronto's good for baseball. It's just got a bunch of dudes, got a couple sons of former great players.
I want Vladdy to win the Triple Crown. That's all I want.
That was sneaky. You said how close he is on average.
Yeah. He's right there. He's right there in everything.
Donnie, any
batting average matters?
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Oh, first of all, I just want to really thank you guys. This was a thrill. Like I talked about not being able to sleep thinking about the 0-1 World Series, but I couldn't sleep last night. I was so excited to come in here, talk about what I'm passionate with some old friends. I mean, this has really, really been a thrill, and I genuinely thank you for having me on, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Take that, Jerry Brooks.
Yeah.
We're going to his kitchen, and he was way nicer.
Yep.
All right, that's episode 47. Of course, enjoy us, whether it's on YouTube and you see the video version, Odyssey, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you for listening, as always.